Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
Mint plants often work for people to calm an upset stomach or clear a headache. That's maybe a more common one that people would know. Mm-hmm. On that sort of bell curve there, it's which mint is the best fit. Mm-hmm. Spearmint is less hot and less activating than peppermint, for instance. People come, in our culture particularly, in our conventional medicine culture of like, I have this and I need to remove this symptom. That's not holistic. And that's not the foundation of my work.
The voice you just heard and the two little snippets taken from our future conversation you're going to hear is of Stacy Quaid. She is part of Energy for Life Connection. Joseph Quaid, her husband, is the other part of that. And she's going to talk a little bit about him and what he does, but I sit down and talk to her and we get a little bit into the work that she does as far as combining healing touch and her history with occupational therapy combined with the herbalism that she does today and how that creates this beautiful practice working with people and helping them find their balance and health and wellness in creating, again, that balance of constitution that she works so well with. Our focus in the conversation that we have today really is looking at the things we might find in our garden, in our yard, on a walk. What might we be able to see and pick up and utilize as a food, something we can eat, something we can make, use for an infusion or a tea to support our immune system going into fall. So we talk mostly about things that are available now or coming up. She talks about methods of drying and storing, and again, how to use some of these things to our benefits. If Stacy's name sounds a little bit familiar to you, she was part of our panel in episode 30 for the Heart to Heart live podcast that we did. She also teaches many classes around town and at Whole Foods and various other places. So you definitely might have seen her information there as well. You know, I just want to mention the little piece that I pulled out from our interview that I played earlier with the mint, discussing peppermint and spearmint. I love that she talked about that because that was one of my first real understanding of the nuances of plants. I had a lot of stomach issues when I was younger, and I got turned on to this spearmint tea that has been my saving grace, quite frankly. When I have a stomach issue, I can drink that and I can feel just fine in short order. And I remember one time I wasn't feeling well and somebody got me mint tea, but it was peppermint tea. And I didn't really fully notice or understand all of the nuances of the difference. And I drank the peppermint tea and I felt worse and I didn't feel good. And the person basically said, you know, you're just being picky. And I was happy to learn before Stacy, but quite a few years ago now, I was happy to have somebody confirm, no, you were not wrong, that those two really do have differences and you react to spearmint, but you don't react well to peppermint. It's nice when you can have those weird little experiences and then somebody can give you insight to what's actually going on. The day I met with Stacy, I had a beautiful opportunity to tour her gardens. She gave me a lovely walk around where she grows many of her herbs. And it was fantastic to be able to do that and learn more about some of the plants and some things that I have taken in a different form and get to see them in their plant form. She showed me one that was amazing. I don't remember what it was called, but she said the leaves aren't really medicinal. The root is, but the neat thing about the leaves is that they, when you break them open, they have this amazing aroma that to me smelled like cardamom. And I guess somewhere in the past, people used to lay these leaves down on their floor. And then when people would step on them, it would break them up. And thus you'd have this beautiful aroma. And I'm thinking that I would have thoroughly enjoyed that aspect of living in whatever time period that was. And perhaps I could recreate that now with a piece of wood on my floor. I don't know, but it would definitely inspire me on a daily basis. So after we had this lovely walk in her garden, we came back in her house and she was in the process of drying some chicken of the woods, which is a mushroom, and her house had this lovely earthy scent to it. So let's go right to that time and join us in our conversation.
That's one of the nice things about this place where I live now. It's very centrally located. Mm-hmm. Energy for Life Connection is right in Duluth Heights. It's accessible from many directions. It's kind of right in the middle of town, so people don't have to drive really far in either any direction to get here for the most part. And I've been here for about 10 years.
And you're making tinctures, medicines, teas?
So yes, all of those things. Okay. The herbal portion of my practice is wildcrafting and growing locally indigenous plants that have medicinal or nutritional properties that can support our health and well-being. A lot of the things that I use to help people with supporting their being more balanced and altering their physical conditions to make themselves be more well come from just the garden space. A lot of the weeds that are growing in the garden that people often pick out and throw away, like amaranth and purslane, are things that are really super high in nutrition and essential fatty acids and things like that that we actually need for healthy bodies, healthy nervous systems, healthy endocrine systems, and it's free.
Right.
If I'm not growing the herbs that I'm using to make the different remedies for people, then we often will go out in the woods in the area. We're so lucky to be in Duluth here where there's so much green space and so much free woodland areas that we can be in and find things to pick. Like right now, coming up into the fall, talking about that, rose hips will be soon available. And there's tons of wild roses in different areas in town. And those rose hips are full of vitamin C. And
the rose hip, what part of the rose is that?
So after the rose is done flowering,
okay,
and it's dyed back, there's this little reddish sort of almost egg-shaped with a point on one end.
Okay.
Little seed pod. That is the hip.
Oh, okay.
So if you go by the rose garden, even, for instance, just to get a look at what they might look like, and you see the roses are dying back, there's these little hard seed pods growing now on where the roses used to be,
okay,
where the flower itself was.
Okay.
And at a certain time, it's good to get them after it's gotten colder.
Hmm.
Sometimes they can have little worms in them. So,
okay.
But it's also a challenge to gather them before all of the little woodland creatures are also gathering for their winter supply.
Right.
So,
and they have a good sense of what nutrients are in these plants.
So rose hips are really great to add to winter tea blends. That's the way I like to use them the most.
Okay.
I don't normally tincture those, but they could be tinctured.
So I'm curious now when you mention like the little worms and the little things. If somebody, because I can imagine, like myself, that would scare me away a little bit. Like, oh, what if I don't catch one? Is it the end of the world if you don't? You know, is there anything that we really should be really worried about making sure we get all the bugs off? Or if we get a little worm, we're just, it's protein if we're not skeeved out by it.
And you can tell right away if you cut one open.
Okay.
If it's got something in it or not.
Okay. It sounds
like
pretty easy to figure out.
When you buy broccoli and you don't notice that there's a broccoli worm on there because they blend in so well.
Uh-huh.
And you might not notice that right away until you're cooking it and it floats up to the top. If people have had that experience. But rose hips are a little bit more identifiable as a solid inside or not.
Okay. So tell me just how, if you went and you picked some rose hips, How would you use that as a tea? Would you kind of chop it up at all, or would it? How does that work?
Mm-hmm. You can dry them.
Okay.
And you can also freeze them. If you have freezer space, I like to just throw them in the freezer because they feel more fresh in the winter.
Okay.
So then, yeah, you can just keep them whole until you go to use them. And then you can chop them up a little bit or smash them, kind of mash them like you would a garlic clove.
Okay.
And just break them open a little so that their insides have more access to the water, and the water can then absorb all of the good stuff out of there with more ease.
I want to get back to, because this is sticking in my mind, of when you were talking about gardening and pulling out all of the weeds and all of the good things that potentially we call weeds. It's always interesting to me what's been defined as a weed mm-hmm. and what isn't. And I remember my dad, you know, talking about Creeping Charlie. And I'm like, but it's so pretty. Yeah. It's not fair to call it a weed. I always thought it was lovely in the yard.
It smells really good, too. Creeping Charlie is also called ground ivy. Creeping Charlie is usually, it grows in places sometimes where there's been damage to the soil.
Oh.
Not just necessarily it's been disturbed because of maybe construction or flood or whatever it is where the topsoil's gone and washed away, but sometimes it can be growing in a place because there's been like a chemical or, you know, imbalance in the soil itself of some nature.
Okay.
Not always good. It helps to leach out toxins.
Okay.
It acts sort of like a sponge for certain things. So that's how it works for our bodies.
Ooh.
It's used in imbalances like heavy metal toxicity, or for instance, if you painted your whole inside of your house one winter day with the windows closed and you're feeling kind of paint headachey, whatever, Creeping Charlie can help your body process some of that stuff out more quickly. You just have to be very careful when you're gathering it to make sure that the area wasn't contaminated versus just disturbed.
Okay.
And, you know, it's growing there to help hold the soil in place and help.
Not pulling out the toxins, otherwise right. you're getting a blend of the intense toxins that it has yes. pulled out to clean the area.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Creeping Charlie, I've learned from my friend Jim McDonald, is good for helping to balance fluids in the heads in particular and the ear. So sometimes what I've learned is that if your condition is kind of fluctuating between like stuffy and clogged to runny and drippy and going back and forth, and maybe it's going down into your eustachian tubes a little bit, that it can help balance that out. It kind of goes in the middle.
Interesting.
Instead of some herbs that maybe you'd use for a stuffy head, which would be moistening and loosening, versus the herbs that are more particularly drying and astringing. So there's this bell curve of how our body is balancing fluids, temperature, moving oils and water around, and what we're looking for is our personal homeostasis. And everybody's constitution is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Even people that maybe have similar genetic history are still going to just be a little bit different in their constitutions, because we just are like that.
Right.
And you can add a little bit more of something astringing or a little bit more of something moistening to really make the perfect formula for a person when they're helping to just kind of balance everything out.
So before we get back into the herbs in the fall and summer herbs, talk a little bit about like how that is to work with somebody. So you're creating all of these things, but you make them very specific for people. So if somebody is having a particular issue, they can come to you, or wanting that basic balance, they come to you, you'd sit down and talk to them and go through a bunch of their health history, right? Mm-hmm. To figure out, here's what you believe is going to work best for them. So you're making things very individualized.
For the most part, I mean, there are things that sort are, you know, foundational tonic herbs and different herbal medicines that really work the same way for the general population. For instance, mint plants often work for people to calm an upset stomach or clear a headache. That's maybe a more common one that people would know. Mm-hmm. On that sort of bell curve there, it's which mint is the best fit. Mm-hmm. Spearmint is less hot and less activating than peppermint, for instance.
Interesting.
It just feels milder when you can even think about it. And so what's the best fit? So when I sit down with someone, the initial consult is usually an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Okay.
But it doesn't just include health information and physical focus. There's a mental, spiritual, and energetic vibrational component that's the underlying foundation. And that's where the energy-based therapy, the healing touch, comes into play. So we look at all of the layers together to find out how situations and emotions are also impacting what's showing up in the body, or the body-mind together, or the emotional state of a person.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of that works together. So a person might walk away from a session with me after a consult with a handout of maybe some strengthening exercises or stretching things to do. Perhaps they'll end up with a tea blend and maybe a tincture to help with balancing not only foundationally, but symptom removal. People come in our culture, particularly in our conventional medicine culture, of like, I have this and I need to remove this symptom. That's not holistic. And that's not the foundation of my work with a client.
Mm-hmm.
Or what I believe. I believe that there's impact in all of those layers, and it starts at that vibrational level. And that the exercises and the nutritional advice and the herbs and all of those things that we can do or have or are tangible are good tools. But that the toolbox itself is that energetic underpinning that also needs to have some attention. And once that layer gets more in balance for a person, then the other things that we're adding, doing, changing work better as well.
That makes sense. Well, I think in this culture too, we don't so much, we know there's emotional stuff and we know that stress is a thing, but we don't so much put them all together and figure out, they feel like they're always many times very separate instead of really going, no, the underlying pieces are our emotions, and that has this huge effect on everything mm-hmm. else.
Yeah, including like how dry your skin is, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So we really sit down and take a look at all of those areas. I have a pretty comprehensive consultation process. I help people learn how to read the signs their body is giving them. Just by sticking out your tongue and looking at it in the mirror, you can learn a lot about what's going on inside. And that's a fun way to have another meter, another way that your body's telling you what's going on. The condition of your fingernails, you know, how you're sleeping, you know, has a lot to do with sore muscles, for instance, or upset stomachs.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that can have an impact on, again, nothing shows up physically first. That's what I have learned in my practice of energy-based therapy, is that physical is actually the very last layer of our being that things show up.
That's when it's gotten kind of its grips in.
Yeah, it's, don't worry, if you don't notice it here, out here in this finer vibration, it will get bigger.
It wants to show itself eventually.
Right. I mean, and we do really want to listen to that part of ourselves, but we in our Western world, you know, in our conventional practices that most of us were socialized with our upbringing, haven't been taught, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We did not get taught that way. It's so it's not a matter of choosing sometimes, it's a matter of not knowing. And so education
right.
is a big piece of what I and Joseph, and when he's working here out of the house too with his private piece of the practice, really strive to share with people, is that how much ownership they really do have, how much knowledge they really do have that they can tune into.
Mm.
That's a big piece.
And what to talk about a little bit about what he does, but then I also want to kind of go over the breadth of what you do and a little bit of your history that brought you here, because you've got a rich history that informs, helps you inform the work that you're doing now.
Joseph is a physical therapist. He has a master's in physical therapy, and right now he works 3 days a week at the CARE building. So yes. He works with the Native American population, and he has for many years, and he's really good at what he does. He's a manual therapist, but he also has some experience in energy-based therapy and herbalism too, and he also blends that more holistic mindset to help people learn how the physical body is really changeable. And he's really good at teaching people and helping them understand the mechanics and the dynamics of their bodies and movements and stretching and strengthening and components. He's just very good at it.
That's helpful, sort of having that understanding of why what you're doing is important, so that, you know, I know when I've had teachers that have helped me with that, you think about it differently, and you sometimes will be more compliant because you understand, and then you can think, as things change, you can think through about how your body's working a little bit and what's going on, and it's just a different, rather than here, do these five things, but you maybe kind of know why, but that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's helped a lot of people change their pain, you know, in a real big way. So both of us are going to be teaching class segments at the co-op this fall.
Oh, wonderful.
He'll be teaching a couple of his ones that he likes to do, teaching people more about their physical bodies. One's all about feet.
Really?
Yeah. And the other one is about incorporating stretching and exercising into like a normal everyday. Not like it's an extra thing, but it can be part of your daily routine.
Okay.
And then I'll be teaching some of the class segments that I've taught in community before, like herbs for the winter, or for all seasons, actually. It's called kitchen cupboard wellness. So things that are right in your kitchen that can, as we loop back around to what should we use for fall, strengthening our immunities, or if we happen to see the kids come home with the first cold of the season, one of the very best things that you can do is get the thyme out of the kitchen cupboard.
Really?
Thyme is one of the best go-to defenses for stopping the common cold, any head mucus kinds of imbalances that are happening. It's a real antimicrobial. It's got a lot of volatile oils in it. Like, one of them in particular is called thymol, which is part of its constituents, which is very, very effective at helping to coat those membranes so that invaders don't like to hang around there. And so it's very, very good mechanism. One season at the hospital when I was working there more regularly, just everybody was coming in with the cold and everything, and I started making pots of tea in the OT kitchen of the time. And just for myself, mostly, but then it was like, what are you drinking? Why aren't you getting sick?
Right.
And like, so the pot kept getting bigger and bigger, and soon some of the other OTs were also, like, starting the pot.
Oh, that's great.
And people were drinking the tea, and it kept that whole invasion of the cold, the common cold, down to a minimum in our department that year.
It's so great, and it's such a great thing to remind us that our food is our medicine.
Yes.
You know, we just forget to use it that way a lot. It's reintegrating that.
Yes.
My other question with that, too, is, like, when we're talking about weeding the garden, what, you know, or they find something out, you find something outside, what is the best resource that you have to say, okay, I've got this stuff growing, what is this?
Right. So there's many online plant identification places that you can go to. Some of them are, you can take a picture and send it and it'll do it by the photo.
Okay.
You can get books. I mean, there's tons of resources out there. There's a book, as people are learning about plants, it's called Botany in a Day. That's got some real good basic information about the parts of plants and the classes and categories and families that plants belong to. So you can start learning the basics that way, and it makes it easier to identify things. The Audubon Society books are great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every single one of those books are really just very handy. We have many of them. They have one for mushrooms, and they have, you know, many for the different areas of plants across the country. You can find good pictures in there, but you can't find necessarily the use information.
Ah, okay.
When I first started learning about herbs, I was taught three sources of reference. So you want to cross-reference things with three different, at least three different pictures, and also three different, like, texts.
Okay.
You know, like, my teachers, Matthew Wood, Margie Flint, Jim McDonald, you know, they are all just, you know, don't just take my word for it. Although it's hard not to do with when they're so fabulous and wise. But go out and double check, cross-reference until you can look at that plant and know without a doubt that that's exactly what it is. I think it was Sam Thayer that said, when you meet someone at a party for the first time and you get introduced by someone else, for instance, you know, and they say, this is yarrow. And you say, oh, nice to meet you, Yarrow. Gosh, it's so nice to meet you. And you talk at the party, but there's all these other people, and it's a new environment. And then you go away, and then perhaps maybe you meet Yarrow at the grocery store. And you're like, that kind of looks like that Yarrow from that party, but I'm not sure. Boy, can't quite be sure. So then maybe you might go and reintroduce yourself again and double check.
Uh-huh.
And then yes, I am Yarrow. And what's your name again? And then, okay, that's like the second encounter. And then maybe the third time you're out and, you know, you're in a different environment and you're at a different gathering. And you go, I know for sure that that is Yarrow. I can see him across the room. That is without a doubt. And you learn that person.
Mm-hmm.
And you just know them.
Right.
You just always know them. And it's the same way with plants. You will always know Yarrow once you know it.
Right.
And that's the way that gets learned.
Wow.
So it's partly just time and experience and
repetitiveness,
I suppose. Yeah, and it takes some years. It can take some years.
Is there any resource for, like, Duluth, or the Twin Ports, or just, like, that kind of area that really talks about what we have up here and what...
There's a good, there are definitely some good books with pictures. Samuel Thayer is great. His books are about foraging and edibles.
Okay.
But he's got great, great pictures and good information about how to preserve them, things that you gather, and how to even do some of the cooking parts. There's a book called What's Doing the Bloomin'. That's really nice because it's got good pictures of many of the area plants, and it is seasonally laid out.
Oh, nice.
So in the beginning of the book is spring.
Okay.
And so even if you're not sure what you got in your hand or that you're looking at the ground, you could say, well, it's August.
Right.
And this book is like, okay, let's look in the middle. And you can sort it out by section that way. And that's a really good book. And it's local.
Okay.
I think the people that wrote it are like from the upper part of Wisconsin here.
Okay.
So nice. That's a good book with good pictures as well.
It's a good way, too, just in the whole, if you are kind of trying to beginning, you kind of are at least starting somewhere where you're not looking at every single plant in the world, but things that are typically here.
And we have a beginning herbalist group that meets once a month. It's fluctuating right now between the third Tuesday and the fourth Tuesday, and its location is ultimately going to be at the Superior Public Library.
Okay.
But they've been under construction for a while.
Oh, yes.
And so moving back there is happening soon. It meets from 6 to 8 on the third or fourth Tuesday of each month.
Okay.
And it's the beginning herbalist group. They have a Facebook group, but it's an invite group. So if anybody wants to join that, you can call the library for information, but also could get a hold of me and we can link them into the group. So that's a great beginner group. Eric Ament has got a Facebook group called Superior Wilders, which is also more of a foraging focus to begin with. But when you're out in the woods and you're looking around for things to eat, it's pretty hard not to notice the other plants that are there for other reasons besides just food. So I think that is a group that I have yet to make it to. It's on Sunday, and I can't remember which Sunday of the month, but it conflicts with another part of my life right now. So they have a nice time, and it's on Sunday afternoons, and they go out as a group.
Okay.
So
and actually practically practice.
Yes.
Again,
like, yep.
Okay.
And then right now, there's kind of a new group developing in town for slightly more advanced practitioners. We're still actually working on a name for it, but there's been an expansion of herbal resources and herbalists in town in the last couple of years. Besides Eric and myself, there's a few newer, younger herbalists that have had some clinical training from some great teachers, and they're working to form a collective of sorts.
Oh, cool.
And want to offer services in the community, like a herbal clinic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily just first aid.
Okay.
But something that maybe someone could walk into and get seen, or maybe scheduling appointments. But to be available in different areas in community as a group offer services, which is something that, as far as I know, has never been part of our community. And I was born here and I've been here most of my life. And I don't think we've ever had the opportunity to have this sort of group formation in this kind of more formal way. So that's exciting, and it's very exciting and interesting to be part of.
Would that look like, in the sense that somebody were, say, to come in and they would kind of work with, have multiple minds on what's going on with them?
Yes.
Okay.
But we're not exactly sure how that's going to all look yet.
Okay, so it's kind of, this is in the beginning.
It might be that maybe one or two people would work with an individual,
okay,
and then those two people would bring it back to the rest of the group.
Okay.
Not like you'd have to sit in a circle of eyes peering at you.
Right. But I'm thinking of how amazing that is, because when I think of you, more minds are brilliant. I mean, medical, you know, when I see that working in medical, when I know the places who have done the trials, and I've known a couple people who have been part of where they have their team, and, you know, they work with their people, and then their team gets together, and sometimes they're with their team and sometimes they're not, but the help that they get and the benefits of being able to talk about, you know, in the Western medicine world, well, oh, wait, but if we use this medicine, then there's this issue if you're using that. And, oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, well, wait, we better do this then. And I'm thinking of how great that can be. I'd love to see that as a Western model more often. But I love that you're doing this, because just what a great ton of knowledge that
yes,
can be.
And that's really kind of the bottom line to it, is that it is, if that teamwork approach can be very facilitatory for an individual's wellness. The other collaboration that is happening as a tangent of that is myself and Melissa Jane Borer, who is a younger clinical herbalist in town, are teaming up to do sort of a service package, if you will. And so the herbal components are going to be her section, and then I will do the energy-based therapy, and we'll be working together with an individual to provide the two services in a holistic and, again, collaborative way to offer that broader perspective, maybe more choices or thought processes about what a person can do to help themselves.
Right. Okay.
So we're going to be working together on that.
That's fantastic. What a great example. I mean, really, we need so much more of that in the world, in all different methods, and it's great that you guys are coming together and doing that.
Yeah, we actually have a meeting tonight, and we're working on things. We're going to be at the Harvest Festival, having a table in the farmer's tent to sort of introduce ourselves as a group to the community, offer more information about the services, and some product available for certain things for people. So,
when is the Harvest Festival?
It is the weekend after Labor Day weekend.
Okay, got it.
So,
it's probably like the 8th and 9th of September?
Something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, it must be, yes.
I mean, first of all, that's really cool. I love that you guys are working together, and it's going to be a huge benefit for people. Back to the herbs in the fall and the late summer. What other like methods can people use to kind of like maybe think about trying something themselves? Like, somebody's kind of out of the gate, this is kind of new, or they want to try something. what might be a good place to start? Is it best to take a class, or is there even like one or two things that they can just kind of go look for and play with to even just feel successful? Or
primary considerations if they're out looking around for something that they want to pick themselves, or making sure that they're far enough away from, you know, roadways, railroad grades, places where there's going to be, again, something to consider might be contaminated. So 50 feet away from a busy road. If you're out and there's like a old logging road in the woods that's underutilized and there's apples growing along the side of it, or blackberries, or whatever it is that you see that you might want to pick, that's a lot different than picking something right on the edge of, say, central entrance. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing. So it's something to remember. What are we downstream from? Who, you know, which neighbor 3 yards up was spraying and is, you know, pesticides, and is that running through the water table into the dandelions that I think I want to eat?
Uh-huh.
You know, so things like that to keep in mind. But dandelion is a really great beginner herb because you really can't mistake them. Mm-hmm. They're very accessible. They're very available. There's many safe places to harvest them. If someone's got dandelions in their yard, chances are they're not spraying. But think about animals, dogs peeing, that kind of thing, just to be aware of those things. But the dandelion is really easy. It's user-friendly. There's tons of information out there about it. You can use the roots. You can eat the leaves. You can eat the yellow part of the top. The only part that you really don't use for medicine or food on a dandelion is the stem itself.
Okay.
But that particular part of the dandelion works really well for warts. The white latex squishy stuff that comes out of the stem, you can dab it on a wart. And if you're consistent and keep it on there, it will make that wart go away.
Wow.
So it's actually a very multifaceted plant. It's got tons of minerals, tons of vitamins. It supports our digestive system, our excretory system. It's just really good for us. So it can be mildly diuretic and drying, so you just have to be careful with that if you're already tending to be on the dry side. But really, it can just be incorporated a lot like salad greens.
Okay.
And the roots can be chopped and dried and either roasted or not roasted and made into tea and coffee substitute.
Oh, wow.
For the wintertime. So it's a real easy one to practice with. Raspberry leaf is another one that's great to gather in the fall. You can cut the whole cane and just take a bunch and hang them up to dry. And raspberry leaf is a very, very supportive tonic herb. Again, one that's got a lot of information out there about it already. It's easy to find. It's pretty easy. Wild raspberries, cultivated raspberries, you know, they're an easy plant to identify. You need to be careful when you're drying them that you can use them when they're very, very fresh or very, very dry. But when they're doing their drying process, you don't want to use those leaves because they're changing a little bit in constitution as they're drying, and they're not quite as helpful for our bodies.
Okay. And the raspberry leaf, what is that supportive of? I'm thinking women and hormones is what I think of. Is that correct?
Yeah, yes. But men can use it too. And it's safe for children. Raspberry leaf is astringent and tonifying.
Okay.
And so one of the reasons that it's supportive for women is because it kind of helps everything in our pelvic floor and abdominal cavities kind of stay toned up.
Okay.
You know, and anybody that's got any extra watery imbalance in their body can benefit from raspberry leaf. It also has a lot of minerals in it, again, and vitamins, so it's supportive in that way.
So let's talk a little bit about the drying process, because I'm thinking of that is something that many people might, you know, have. They have the raspberry bush or whatever. It's okay. So drying the raspberry leaves or something else even. So what are the best processes to do that? Do you need a dehydrator? Can you do it in your oven? Everybody like has a sauna. So what can somebody do to start that process? Mm-hmm.
Your sauna comment. My drying rack that I use to hang clothes on doubles as a rack for hanging bundles of herbs to dry. The fact that it's in the sauna right now when it's off is just a convenient location and easy to clean up anything that's crumbling onto the floor versus having it in the treatment room on the carpet.
I know I've certainly heard of people using their saunas to do meat drying. So.
But that's a good way. If you have one of those folding clothes drying racks, that's a really convenient way to dry small bundles of herbs.
And they can just sit out in the air and do their thing.
Yeah, okay. You want to try and keep them out of real direct sun.
Okay.
And that's another reason that they're in there. For my personal space, lots of herbs dry well hanging. If you don't have space to hang, you can pick your plant and put, like for instance, the flower top side down into an open paper bag. And you don't want to pack anything in there. You want lots of air to be able to circulate and move around, but then every day you just kind of go in there and move them around and make sure that they're drying. And that's a good way to dry things, especially that fall apart a bit.
Okay.
Because then it just falls down into the bag, and then when it's nice and dry, you just strip the rest of the stems, and then you can put that into your jar in the dark cupboard where they're going to keep the best. So glass jar, dark is better, but it's for sure a dark cupboard, and making sure you label everything is really important, even when it's drying, because you might think, oh, I'm going to remember that this green leaf over here is this plant. And this green leaf over here is this plant. And when they're dry, they kind of can look the same, especially as a beginner. So if you're going to dry things like laying on a screen, old window screens work great. That's the configuration I have here in my herb shop. Just with some small boards in between them, they can stack easily.
And then you put do you have a cloth or a paper that they lay on?
Piece of brown paper, which I repurpose from when I order containers. They pack the boxes, the shipping boxes, with big pieces of brown paper.
Yes.
So I just fold those out and save them. And then I have those to use to dry herbs and things in this season. So that works well for me. You could use, again, paper bags. You could use, whatever you need to. Sometimes if there's nothing underneath it, if you're not stacking anything, you don't need to worry too much
about
anything falling on top of each other. And some things just don't fall through the holes because they're just bigger pieces of plant or root, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So that works.
And what about dehydrator
Yep, dehydrators are nice. You have to pay attention. Things can dry very quickly in a dehydrator, and it's nice to be able to have one that you can monitor the temperature on if you're so fortunate, because when you start getting the heat up too high, it can break down the integrity of what you're drying.
Sure.
Especially if raw is a big word in your world, there's a temperature threshold for that to keep things more vibrant and viable. For instance, right now I'm dehydrating the chicken of the woods mushrooms, some in my dehydrator and also some in my oven, because it was such an abundant harvest, which I'm so excited about. But when you do it in the oven, a good way to do it is you turn the oven on to the lowest setting, warm, which is about 170. And that's a little bit, that's above raw food.
Okay.
But for drying herbs, that can be a little bit different. But you let it heat up and then you turn it off.
Okay.
And then you put your herbs in there. And then you just leave the door shut.
Okay.
You might have to pull them out, and it stays warm in there for quite some time. So after a few hours, you can check, see how they're doing. You might have to pull your trays back out, do the same thing again. Until the herbs are very, very dry.
Okay.
And then you can put them in the jar and store them in a similar way.
Okay. Cool. What is the tea called? Everybody's drinking it.
Is it chaga?
Yes.
Chaga is a growth, a fungus, if you will, that grows on the birch tree. It's not actually bark.
Okay.
So it's a hard, lumpy growth that's a symbiotic relationship between the tree and its mushroom, the chaga spores. They grow together. And it is used, it's a very old, traditionally used in places where there are birch trees, in Russia and indigenous cultures around the United States. And it's supportive for a lot of things. It's a good tonic. It's relatively easy to find. We need to remember that birch trees don't grow in many places all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes a long time for a chaga mushroom to grow. It can be harvested sustainably.
Okay.
But it takes many years for one to get big, like the size of a softball.
Okay.
Take maybe 10 years or so. So,
wow.
Just being, again, mindful when you're harvesting anything. When you're going to cut the canes off of the raspberry plant and you walk up and you just start hacking off branches, that's like somebody walking up and cutting off your hair.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
Without asking.
Right.
I really like this. I want some. And so you want to take a moment to connect and listen in. It's a good way to find out from the plant itself, if you're quiet for a moment, if there's been a reason not to pick in that area. You will get a feeling. You will get a sense, some insight, some intuition, however that word wants to come to you, a message that says it's okay. And any herbalist that I've ever learned from or practiced with knows to make some sort of a offering. Give back. You give them a little bit of water, or you say a thank you prayer, or you know, many cultures teach to leave a bit of tobacco or another sacred herb at the feet of the plant. Many ways you can do that, and, you know, they can be different depending on what you've been taught and your belief system, but do something, but pay attention and connect in. So that's important.
Do you have any, I'm thinking of the chaga, do you have any recommendations of when you do know what you're looking for? Like, is there any particular way of cutting or taking it off that is best for it? Or
it's
is
actually
that something
very hard.
Okay.
When a chaga has reached its full growth, or if the tree is, because it only grows on the tree where the tree has been actually damaged.
Okay.
It's sort of like a patch, okay. A natural patch.
Protection?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
When the tree is dying, you'll never see a chaga on a healthy, vibrant, young birch tree. If a branch has been broken, if it's been stuck by lightning, if it's had some animal damage to it or something, that's where it'll grow if the two pieces come together. And it's like kind of hard, like the tree itself. It's part of the tree, really. And so you have to use something sharp. You can kind of pry it off or cut it off, but in order to be sustainable, you want to leave the root of that on the tree. You want to try and dig the whole thing out. You just take the pieces that kind of come off easily.
Okay.
So, and it gets even harder as it dries. So it's best if you can chop it up into usable size chunks right away.
Before it dries. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've never actually, like, I know next to nothing about harvesting it, but it's something that I've benefited from other people harvesting to make tea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I hear about all the time. So I thought it would be maybe a good thing to bring up because it is something that's has very popular right
one,
now.
One more sustainable maybe way of using it is we make it into what's called a double extraction tincture.
Okay.
Which is kind of a two-layered process for making something that ends up in a little dropper bottle that's very concentrated. So instead of drinking cups of tea and, you know, that sort of thing, you can just take a few drops every day.
Nice.
And lots of people like to use it that way. One thing to know, if you're using the dried chunks of chaga as a infusion, you can reuse those chunks until no color comes out of them.
Oh.
So you just have to make sure you dry them out well in between your batches so that they don't get moldy or bacteria growing on them. But if you scoop them out, strain your infusion through a strainer, and that air can get to that and the chunks can dry out, then you can reuse those multiple times.
Okay.
Which is another way to then be more sustainable with it.
Right. Well, yeah, you might as well get all you can get out of it. Right. That's great. Yeah.
So,
okay, thank you. That's good. I like it the same. I was thinking I needed to ask you about that because that's one that comes up so frequently.
Uh-huh.
Anything else?
Apples. Okay. Apples are, you know, apples are medicine. Apple a day, you know, all of those. It's apples are full of things our body needs to help with pain relief, even.
Mm-hmm.
And there's allicins in apple. Lots. Some people are a bit allergic to apples, so if you can eat them, they support your digestive system with their pulp and their pectin. They have ascorbic acid, which is vitamin C. There's tons of wild apple trees around in the different woods and areas, and apples of different sizes. If you find a crabapple tree that's got some decent-sized crabapples, but they're not maybe big enough to peel for a pie or dry, you know, you can always juice and make juice or use them in that way, make applesauce. So,
are there any apples that are like dangerous that you should watch out for, or are they pretty safe?
I don't think I've ever heard of any apples that are dangerous.
Okay.
There are a lot of ornamental crab apple trees and things growing in people's yards in town. Most of those are so typically small, like more like a hard birdberry, that people wouldn't probably bother with them.
Mm.
And I'm not so sure that they're unsafe. They're just not good.
Good or tasty or, you know, enjoyable just, to eat.
I mean, yes.
I remember in elementary school, we were doing a thing where we had to like look at our food and what we ate and the nutrients. And I remember looking at apples and being very disappointed because I thought the nutrients would be, you know, the apple a day keeps the doctor away thing. I expected way more high nutrients on the stuff that we measure, you know, and then as going through life, it's the kind of what you're saying is the benefits of apples and thinking it's so much stuff we don't measure. And there's so many things that are in them and in other foods that are helpful, but it's not the thing that we measure to make sure we get enough vitamin, you know, A, D, E, etc. Those benefits sometimes they were lost on me in the moment where I'm like, oh, apples, I don't need to eat apples anymore. Let's go back to talk about your background a little bit more and kind of what brought you here, kind of with your history and what got you into the doing this and being excited about herbs and making all of these great things.
Well, I started out my integrative holistic practice as an occupational therapy assistant, and I worked at Miller Dwan on the rehabilitation unit for 30 years. And when I was working full-time, I was a core member of the traumatic brain injury team, but I've worked on all of the different diagnosis teams over the years as part of that therapy group. Occupational therapy is very holistic in its Western paradigm. You know, it works with a lot of areas of our being, from self-cares to visual perception to cognitive skills to how you put that all together and move your body and do something while you're thinking at the same time and balance. And so it was a real comprehensive all by itself as a conventional therapy. One day, partway through my career there, I walked into the copy room, and on the bulletin board was a flyer for Healing Touch classes, which is a energy-based therapy that integrates well into the conventional system because it has its roots in holistic nursing. And it was built as a continuing education for healthcare practitioners. That being said, anybody can take a class. Anybody can learn to use the techniques for moving energy in their own selves or to help someone else. And it's built into us. It's natural. You can't turn this off if you wanted to. And that was like a light bulb going off. I grabbed the flyer, went to my first course, and never looked back. And that was in 2002, because once you open that door, nothing, you can't go back. The experiences that I'd had with nature and plants and herbs prior to that was also pretty unstructured, and I didn't have an elder in my family teaching me things as a child. I learned everything I know about herbs and herbalism from being a young adult onwards. And at the same time that I followed the path down the energy-based therapy, then the herbalism came into more form and structure. And I've learned from some just so many amazing, wise teachers and had clinical experiences out in Massachusetts with my dear teacher and friend, Margie Flint. Learned from Matthew Wood. He was really my very first herbal teacher. Jim McDonald, like I said, who's from Michigan. My friend Nicholas Schnau, who is from Omaha. They're kind of my primary group of people that I really have learned most of how I practice, not just what I know from. I really appreciate the work of Paul Bergner, and I have yet to meet him and sit in his presence, but that's on my list. And so that part goes on. So over the years, after I started taking those classes, I was working full-time and doing this after work, you know, on the side, on weekends. I started vending at the farmers markets with my product and sharing with community the different herbal concoctions and remedies and configurations. And I slowly shifted my time in each area. So I started going part-time at the hospital so I could spend more time in my private practice. And just little by little over the years until I could no longer carry any sort of point, whatever, FTE at the hospital anymore. And just kind of held my nose and took the jump and opened up space for this to expand more. And here we are then today.
Nice. Yeah. And you're integrating, like you say, the healing touch and the herbalism and then your history working with people. What a great combination of things to really support somebody with.
It feels really complete. It feels really complete. When I go to the hospital and I don't use the energy work as part of an OT session, it does feel like maybe there could be more. That being said, when you learn how to use your own energy, which is always on, you can help someone shift their vibration just by being with them, because it works that way. And so by being in a state of healing presence with someone, that just helps them shift their state of being just by proximity. So it's always on.
Do you have like just a couple of examples of people you've worked with or things that you've seen that, you know, the herbs or that your work that you've gotten to be witness to kind of shifting over time for somebody?
There's just so many. From a hospital perspective or from here?
From here. Yeah.
I've seen people shift from being in very inflamed, painful pattern of musculoskeletal imbalance or digestive imbalance, switch some of the lifestyle habits that they have, add herbs in, receive energy work, and weeks to months, maybe later, sometimes more quickly than that, feel healed, feel calm inside, feel clear, feel not inflamed, feel pain-free.
It's a big deal.
Watching someone be able to walk into the back door upright and clear-eyed versus the first time maybe they came and they were hanging onto the railing and slightly stooped or maybe less vitality looking in their skin. It's nice to see people improve and feel better. Worked with little kids that have had trouble concentrating in school, whether diagnosed with, you know, any of the labels that might occur like ADD or ADHD, and helped parents to learn how to help their kids, and herbs that can also facilitate concentration, helping sleep, and doing energy work and showing the kids how they can be more grounded, teaching them young to remember what's built into them that they kind of already know.
Before it's kind of society and culture in the world has kind of shut that down.
And having a mom tell me, you know, in the grocery store when I say, oh my gosh, this semester was so different. It was easier, or just it was not as hard at home to do the routine, those kinds of things that when you can impact a kid.
Right.
And make their life feel more peaceful. That's huge.
Right. Oh, my gosh. So huge. They can concentrate on being a kid in school. Mm. And sometimes, well, and we think of the ADD and all of those labels, when how often isn't it sometimes just the kid is just, they're just a kid. They have a ton of energy. That's what kids do. Yeah. But trying to make that then work in our world and help them be functional in right. that world.
Yeah. Functional within their own paradigms.
Right.
Whatever that looks like to that person.
Right. Wow. That's fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anything else you want to share?
I'm certainly open and available. If someone wants to, you know, have a small class, or, you know, a couple, three friends want to get together and do a couple of hours of, you know, come out to my yard and show me what I've got here. That's something that I do for people.
Okay.
And that can be really helpful to, it's that practical experience. So taking a class, reading books, watching videos, those kinds of things that are going to give that a multi-level learning mm-hmm. is really good and important. You know, go to a herbal conference. They're very fun. And they're for all levels of learners. Those are just some really good ways to start. Come to the herb groups.
Yeah, and that's good for somebody who's like, I don't even know if I'm interested, but I kind of maybe want to check this out. And
yeah.
That's a good place for yeah. them.
Okay. They're free. They're monthly. You can come once and decide not and come sporadically. And so, I mean, there's a lot of option for learning.
And you have them all the way through winter,
those yeah.
classes?
Yes, okay. definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. Joseph and I are also here to help and can be contacted through the website. Our phone number and all of that is on there, too, if that's more comfortable for people.
Wonderful. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is fantastic. If you are looking to connect up with Stacy, you can do it through her website, which is energyforlifeconnection.com. We talked about a lot of stuff in there. We talked about classes at the co-op and monthly meetings about herbalism and books and all of those things. Check into the show notes on wellnessrenpodcast.com. And if you're not listening to it on the website, and if you are, you can go to the show notes and you can find all of that information. And definitely check the Whole Foods Co-op here in Duluth, their website and their class schedule, if you're interested in checking out those classes. Stacy put together a fantastic information sheet called Free Salad that talks about amaranth and purslane, two greens that are available outside now. It talks about where we can find them when we're out and about or in our garden, how they taste, how to use them in salads and in cooking, and the great nutrition that they contain, which is kind of sometimes very interesting and surprising to read through what all of these things actually have in them. And then some really fantastic pictures to help identify what you're actually looking at. She also shares some really interesting experiences that she has had with them as well. You can get this free salad sheet by going to her website, energyforlifeconnection.com, and signing up for her newsletter. It comes to you as a little welcoming thank you gift. And she did say that if you are listening to this and you already are getting her newsletter, that there is a way on the website, I believe, that you can actually get it without having to sign up for her newsletters twice. So if you're not finding that, you may want to connect and check in with her about that. Thank you so very much for listening to this episode and to other episodes of the Wellness Wren podcast. You can find more of them at wellnesswrenpodcast.com. All of the podcasts from the first episode are on that site. You can also find us on iTunes, and I see via my website that we're also on Stitcher. New things happen, and I just find out about it when I show up. Also, as you may recall, I have a Patreon page. So if you would like to support the podcast, you can go to the website, click on the Become a Patron, and support through the Patreon page. Thank you so much for listening and sharing the podcast. That is also a really wonderful way to support the podcast, is to listen and share, write a review on iTunes if you have a moment. All of those things really do mean a lot. So thank you so much. I also invite you to connect and contribute on the Facebook page. You can search for Wellness Renaissance or go to facebook.com/wellnessren. I think that covers it for today. Thank you again. And until next time, may you find the pieces that fit perfectly into your health and wellness puzzle. Take care, and we'll talk to you soon.